Hello, and welcome back to Dagish America Presents. I'm Ben Harl, and I'm so happy to have the opportunity to talk to you about this industry that I work in. On the last episode, we talked to Bartek Dranowski about some of the duties you'll need to perform during the fumigation exposure period. It's always so important that we all remain vigilant during this time period to make sure that we and all the bystanders remain safe. So, you've reached your target concentration of fumigant in the allotted time, and now it's time to initiate aeration. What are the steps necessary to get the job done? Well, we've invited Mike McLean, Director of Regulatory Affairs at Dagish America, to join us to offer up some tips and tricks when it comes to safely aerating fumigation. And while we have him, we're also going to pick his brain about some of the upcoming label changes associated with phosphine. So, please help me welcome Mike to the podcast. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. I appreciate it. So you are a first-time podcast guest. So one thing that I always like to do at the very beginning, especially with new podcast guests, is I like to give them an opportunity to kind of tell us a little bit about themselves. So if you could just kind of tell us who you are and what you do, that'd be great.
Sure. Well, I basically worked my entire career at Dagish America. I started in 1989 while I was still attending North Carolina State University, working, you know, part-time, weekends, holidays, that sort of thing. And after I graduated, I did a few other things, but I kept my ties with Dagish and I continued to help out with, you know, summer and holiday weekend fumigations. In 1994, the opportunity came along to move to our New Orleans office. I formally joined the company and was a licensed applicator at our Gulf division until 1997. And then I moved to our Houston division. I was there until 2001 when I became the division manager of our Columbia River division in Portland, Oregon, and was there for 11 years. And then 2012, chance came along to get back to the East Coast. So my wife and I packed up the dogs and moved to Virginia. And since June 2012, I've been the Director of Regulatory Affairs for Dagish America. And in 2014, I was also appointed as the Vice President of Sunzone International, which is a sister company, and I'm responsible for the international sales of our fumitoxin brand.
So you have quite literally worked just about everywhere that Dagish America has a footprint then.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I know we have some other folks that work for us that's traveled around a little bit, but I don't know if anybody's worked as many places as you have. So I definitely think you're a well-rounded individual for Dagish.
Either that or they just don't, they can only stand me for so long and they make me move to somewhere else.
All right. So today's topic, we're talking about aeration. So the initial inspection walkthrough has been done. The application's been done. The exposure period's done. We're at the point where we need to start taking down the seals and beginning that aeration process. So I was hoping that I could get you to kind of just walk us through what a typical aeration looks like and maybe what some of the steps are involved.
Sure. Well, I'd say the first step in beginning an aeration is actually the last step in the exposure phase of the fumigation. And that's to determine the concentration that's still inside the structure before you begin the aeration. It gives you a measure of your fumigation success. It gives you an idea of how much phosphine you're going to be releasing out into the environment. And also this step's going to be very important considering some upcoming regulatory changes that I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So the next step would be they're going to be determined by the type of aeration that you have planned. So it could be a passive aeration where you're just removing the seals and you're opening up the structure, all the doors and other openings, and just allowing the gas to be naturally diluted and removed through just natural airflow. And then there are various means of actively aerating a structure as well. Active means you're using, fans or some other mechanical means to remove the fumigant from the structure. And so for active aerations, you need to consider a release height. If you're doing an active aeration with a ground level release, then you're obviously going to have a higher concentration at ground level where you are and where other workers are and bystanders could be located. If you can release at a higher point, that gives more of an opportunity for the gas to become diluted before it reaches the ground level. And then finally, you need to monitor, to protect, not only yourself and workers, but bystanders who might be on adjacent properties. You should monitor the progress of the aeration. And of course, you'll need to ultimately take measurements to determine when the aeration is complete.
Okay. Yeah, I'm glad you defined, you know, passive and active aeration, because I think both of those methods are used pretty prevalently. One of my favorite things to do, if the facility has them installed, is to use roof exhaust fans to pull the fumigant out through the roof line. That way you don't even have to worry about, well, I shouldn't say you don't have to worry about at all bystander safety, because that's always a risk, but it lessens the risk for bystander safety because all of the gas is being pulled out at the roof line several feet above where people are going to be. So anytime that you, in my opinion, that you have exhaust fans at the roof line or anything where you can blow it out several feet in the air, I think that's always going to be the preferred method when it's possible.
Yeah, I would say that either passive aeration, because it occurs so slowly and the gas has the opportunity to become diluted and it's not being, you know, forced out at a high concentration, that, or if you're doing an active aeration to release it as high as possible, like you say.
So I've also seen this a lot, and I've actually done it myself too, several times in my fumigation career, especially, you know, in the Midwest on grain bins, where we use the J system recirculation method, where you do an active aeration and it is a high concentration that's coming out, but you can actually direct where you want that fumigant to head toward. So you can minimize the chance for bystander safety. So for example, if you have a grain bin that's in a small town, and there's homes across the street, but on the backside of it, there's nothing but fields. You can actually use the J system fans to blow through the tubing out toward the field instead of it going out toward the homes or the residences that are across the street. Now, you're still going to want to monitor the areas between those residential areas and the aeration to make sure that you're not having any fumigant head in that direction. But that's one thing that another thing I really like about active aeration is you can direct it to go, for the most part, where you want it to go, where you know you're going to minimize the risk for bystander safety.
Sure. And another thing you need to be aware of is our wind conditions, you know, the direction the wind's going and the wind speed.
I'm glad you brought that up, because you're absolutely right. Weather conditions are going to play a big part in that. And there's been a lot of times where, you know, time is of the essence. You know, you have facilities that they only give you this certain short window of time to perform the entire fumigation, and active aeration is going to have to be necessary. And then when wind conditions come in, a lot of times passive aeration is tough too. If you open up all of the doors and the wind's blowing in a certain direction, you can create kind of a negative pressure, so to speak, where the fumigant doesn't want to leave. Whereas maybe instead of opening up all doors, maybe if you just open up two doors in the direction of the wind, it'll act as a wind tunnel and it'll actually pull that fumigant out even faster. So there's all these different ways that you can control the aeration to control where the fumigant's going to go outside of the structure. I mean, you can only control it so much. It's a gas. It's going to go where it's going to go. Okay. But you're right. Wind conditions, active, passive aeration, all this stuff comes into play.
Yeah, there is a lot of art to it.
yeah. And, you know, not everything
can open up in on which side of the building, and just being aware of the conditions and what's around you.
Yeah, and every facility is different. And sure. Every facility is different every time you fumigate it because of those weather conditions. If it's really hot and it's really still, it's going to take a long time for passive aeration to happen. sure. If it's windy, passive aeration can happen very quickly. So if you know it's going to be a hot, very still day, passive aeration may not be your best bet, especially, like I said, if the facility is time sensitive and they want that facility back faster, you may need to bring fans or you may need to do something to speed up that aeration process.
Yeah, absolutely right. One thing you do need to be aware of, though, is that certain commodities require a minimum aeration period. Foods and feed commodities require, you know, 48 hours of aeration before they're released to an end user. But other commodities like tobacco, for instance, have minimum aeration periods depending on what type of packaging it's enclosed in.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, that's something that a lot of people don't talk about when it comes to fumigation. I know, at least in the Midwest, when we do grain bin fumigations, seed warehouses, things like that, that 48 hours isn't really too much of an issue because it's not going to be packaged and processed in that 48-hour period. But if you have tight timelines and you have a facility that's going to be utilizing that product within 48 hours, I mean, you have to have a conversation with them. You have to let them know if it's not a commodity that's allowed, they can't. It's a label breach.
Yep, exactly. And you have to remember that you're not just clearing the airspace, you're clearing the commodity. And some commodities and some packaging requires a longer time to fully aerate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And speaking of that, so that segues right into the next question I was going to ask you, which has to do with the final walkthrough of the facility. So you've hit the aeration point where you feel like you're getting things under control, your headspace or your ambient airspace, you're reading under the 0.3 parts per million for phosphine or whatever fumigant you're reading, you're under that time-weighted average. So when you're doing that final walkthrough, what are some of the things that you need to think about before you're actually going to be turning it back over to the person managing the facility?
Sort of the things that we've just been talking about with the different types of packaging. If you're doing a warehouse, for instance, you could have different commodities that are packaged in different ways. So you'll need to make sure that you're checking not just the airspace, of course, but packaging that's in a cardboard box or packaging that's in a wooden barrel, or a cardboard box could have a poly lining inside, and commodities that are packaged that way are going to take longer to aerate. So making sure you're checking every possible scenario.
Yeah. I always look at it from not just from an aeration perspective, but I look at it from a housekeeping perspective too. You always want to make sure you know how many warning signs or placards you put up on all of the doors and sides of the facility. So when you do your walkthrough, your final walkthrough, you're going to be wanting to remove those. Don't leave any behind. I can't tell you how many times I've been out on a fumigation, and at the end of the aeration, I do my final walkthrough, and the person that was responsible for removing the placards forgot two or three of them on the backside. You don't want to leave them up because then people get scared. And I've had those calls from customers the next day. Hey, we've been in this building for 8 hours and we just noticed that there's a placard on the back door. Are we in danger? Is it safe? Oh, yeah, we finished aerating. Well, then why in the heck didn't you take the placard off? Oh, well, we forgot. So you always want to make sure that you do a good job of looking at that. You always want to leave the facility looking the same way that it was when you arrived. So you want to get all your poly out. You want to get all your tape out. You want to get all of your debris out. You want to throw it away, collect it up. You want to collect up the placards. Like I said, if you made any kind of mess or spill, you want to make them aware of it. If you can't clean it up yourself, any equipment that you turned off, you want to have a conversation with the facility to make sure that they know to turn it back on. So housekeeping issues like that are something that I think about. But I also think that you're absolutely right about making sure that the commodities are aerated properly too. If it takes 7 hours for the fumigant to reach the center mass of a commodity, it's probably going to take about 7 hours for it to leave the center mass of that commodity minimum before it's safe. So you always have to make sure that you're giving yourself enough time for the aeration of the commodities to transpire.
Yeah. And if there's a poly lining or something like that inside of a carton, it can take longer to come out than it took to get in.
Oh, absolutely. And like we've said, weather plays a big part too. If it's colder, the gas isn't going to move as fast. So allow yourself some extra time. There's nothing worse than performing a fumigation for a customer and promising them a 72-hour fumigation, and you hit the 72-hour mark, and then you have to tell them, hey, I know you have people in a parking lot ready to come in for their shift, but I'm going to need another 12 hours from you because it's not safe yet. You always want to kind of plan for the emergencies.
Exactly.
And err on the side of caution.
Yep.
So I know when we're working with phosphine, metal phosphides, aluminum and magnesium phosphide, there's a good chance that at the end of the aeration, you may have to do some kind of a fumigant deactivation of the product before you can throw it away or take it to a sanitary landfill. I was hoping maybe I could get you to kind of just define what we mean by fumigant deactivation and then just kind of talk about the differences between the two different types of deactivation that are available.
Sure. So deactivation, it's a process to ensure that any residual fumigant material is completely reacted before you ultimately dispose of that in a landfill. This can be done through following either a dry method or a wet method, and both those are described in the labeling and in the applicator's manual. So for wet deactivation, what you're doing is you're taking the fumigant material and you're submerging it in water and you're keeping it below the surface of the water and holding it for a minimum of 36 hours for aluminum phosphide or 6 hours for magnesium phosphide. For aluminum phosphide formulations, you generally add a detergent to the water to make a 2% solution. For magnesium phosphide, that's not necessary. You can use plain water. Dry deactivation is simply holding the fumigant material inside of a secure, well-protected area, protected from water for a sufficient time to allow for the complete reaction of the material. That can be as simple as extending the fumigation period and holding it inside the structure that you fumigated, or it can also be collected and stored in there are specially constructed drums available or baskets where you can collect this material and hold it in a secure place away from moisture until a sufficient time has passed that it's completely reacted and can be disposed of safely.
Is there ever a time where the spent material does not have to be collected back up and deactivated?
Sure. When you're using pressed compounds like tablets or pellets, not a packaged product, and you're applying it directly to raw agricultural commodities. In those cases, those commodities are further processed later on, and the residual dust from those pressed compounds is removed in that process. But there are certain commodities that you don't want to come into actual contact with the fumigant material, and so you'd use a dustless application for that. And in those cases, those packages have to be removed and disposed of.
Yep. And I think the only other time that you really don't have to worry about aeration yourself as a fumigator is if you're doing an in-transit fumigation. So an in-transit fumigation is when you're fumigating like a ship, a barge, a rail car, something. You can't do in-transit fumigations over public roadways. That's against the label. It's a DOT violation. But if it's over railways or waterways, a lot of times you can fumigate commodities. They still have to be aerated, but you as the fumigator aren't the one that's going to be aerating them. You're initiating the fumigation, you're applying the product, you're sealing up the vehicle, whether it's a ship hold, whether it's a sea container, whether it's a rail car, and then it goes into transit and then it gets aerated at the destination instead of you aerating it.
Correct. Generally, aeration while in transit is not allowed. So it's aerated when it reaches its destination, and you as the fumigator are responsible for notifying the receiver of that vehicle that this is coming in under fumigation, and here are the instructions, or here's where you can find the instructions to aerate that commodity and dispose of any residual material.
And it's your responsibility to make sure you're providing them with the information that the structure has been fumigated, but then once it leaves your hands, it becomes their responsibility to make sure that it's aerated properly. I also know that documentation for fumigations is extremely important. What kind of additional items do you think need to be added to the fumigation management plan pertaining to aeration?
As part of the fumigation management plan, obviously you have to have your plan for aeration, how you expect to carry that out, what steps you're taking to protect workers and bystanders, and any readings that you take, they need to be documented. If you didn't write it down, it didn't happen. So you need to keep records of any measurements that are taken, that pre-aeration reading that you took in the structure, any industrial hygiene readings that you've taken, fence line monitoring that you've done, and then those final clearance readings that you take before you release the structure back to the customer. Even if you get a zero, you need to write down a zero.
Because yeah.
If you didn't write it down, it didn't happen. And there are actually a lot of instruments out that have data logging capabilities that can store that information for you that you can later download into an Excel spreadsheet or something like that.
I know, obviously, that personal protective equipment or PPE is vital when we're working with fumigants. What kind of PPE is necessary to have on hand to potentially use during the aeration process?
Obviously, you need to have gas detection equipment to be able to take those monitoring readings and also for your personal protection readings. But you also have to have respiratory protection available on site in case it's needed. That could be either an SCBA or the gas mask with the chin-style canister, depending on what sort of concentrations you're dealing with.
And of course, if you're working in areas where height is a concern, you may have to have like safety harnesses, gloves, hard hats, safety shoes, the normal PPE you may need in certain environments. But I think out of all of that, the most important items to have on hand, of course, like you said, are the gas detection equipment. So you know what concentration you're working in, and then the respiratory equipment, because we all know how fumigants work. They work through inhalation. And they can kill us through inhalation just as easily as they can kill a pest through inhalation, if not easier. So that respiratory PPE is going to be vital.
Yeah, the other PPE is it's going to be, you know, job dependent, depending on, you know, what you need for the specific task that you have to do.
Right. Yeah. So now I'm going to change gears wildly and step away from aeration for a second. And I know with you being the director of regulatory affairs, I wanted to take an opportunity. And you mentioned this earlier that we're going to be seeing some phosphine label changes coming up. So I wanted to take an opportunity to kind of pick your brain on some of the label changes that we can expect coming up soon. And then just kind of tell us what those are.
Yeah, so the original PID, proposed interim decision, was published by EPA back in late 2020. And it called for things like buffer zones during the fumigation period, as well as during the aeration period. It called for mandatory minimum size buffer zones around any treated structure. But in July of this year, a revised PID has come out. We won't have the treatment buffer zones anymore. We don't have the mandatory minimum buffer zones anymore, but we still could potentially have aeration buffer zones in certain situations. For aeration buffer zones, the need for them or the size of that they have to be, if they are required, are going to be determined by taking into consideration the unique circumstances of each individual fumigation aeration. So what we foresee is a series of tables in the applicator's manual that fumigators will consult, and each table will be for a specific type of aeration. We talked about passive and active and release height and so forth. So for example, there'll be a table for passive aeration. There'll be a table for active aeration with ground release, separate table for active aeration with a roof level release, and so on. And then you'll use the appropriate table, taking the volume of the structure that you're going to be aerating and that pre-aeration concentration reading that you took, and you're going to determine if a buffer zone is needed, and if so, what the size is. So what we're finding is that for the vast majority of aerations, they're not going to require a buffer zone. For example, for passively aerated structures that are less than 2.5 million cubic feet, no buffer zone is required regardless of concentration. Also, for passively aerated structures, if that final concentration reading you took is less than 900 parts per million, then there's no buffer zone, regardless of the structure size. So for active aeration, as we said, we're pulling a higher volume of gas out in a shorter amount of time. It's going to depend greatly on release height, which we talked about earlier. But for the concentration levels that are mentioned in these tables and for the enclosure size that are typical, very few of those are going to require buffer zones.
That's good news for us. I can't tell you the last time that I initiated an aeration with phosphine and my concentration was over 900 parts per million at the point of aeration. Typically, it's much less than that. So I don't think buffer zones are really going to play a big part in future aerations.
No, and when they do come into play, it's going to be mostly on structures that have larger structures that have active aeration at ground level.
So does that mean that there's going to be a different table for like stacked aeration or like roof height aeration then?
Right. I believe the tables were passive, active at ground level, active with roof level or higher, and then active with stacks that extend above the roof line, and then active using stacks that are away from the structure, like a portable stack where it might be several feet away from the building. And then it takes into account different heights of that portable stack.
Okay. Well, it sounds pretty straightforward to me then. I mean,
yeah. When people first see it, they might see, all these, you know, five or six different tables I've got to look at. But no, you only have to look at the one that's relevant for your type of aeration.
Right. Yeah. It sounds pretty straightforward. And man, I sure am glad that the buffer zones are easy on the fumigator, because I fumigated with methylbromide a lot in my past too. And man, some of the buffer zone tables and how those are calculated is not easy at all. So I'm glad to hear that the phosphine label is taking a break on us. Sounds like, at least.
Yeah, I think it's going to be user-friendly. I think it still meets the needs of industry. And it also met EPA's requirements to address the concerns that they had about bystander exposure.
Right. All right. So I only have one question left for you. And I ask a version of this question of every guest that I have on the podcast. What advice would you give a new fumigator about aerating a fumigation safely and effectively?
You probably get this answer a lot. Read the label and monitor.
Yeah.
Read the label, monitor, protect yourself, protect your workers, protect other workers that are on site, and protect bystanders.
That's perfect. That's the most important message that we can give people is be safe.
Yeah, exactly. And none of it means anything if everybody doesn't go home safe at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, that's all I had for you today. I really appreciate your time.
No problem, Ben. My pleasure.
All right. See ya. I want to thank Mike for talking to us about aerating fumigations. Remember, you are responsible for the fumigant molecule all the way through the fumigation up to the final clearance and release. On the next episode of Degish America Presents, we're going to drill down and talk about one fumigation type in particular, ship fumigations. And remember, if you have a question you'd like for us to answer, please feel free to email us at podcast@degishamerica.com. And you can also find us on our website at degishamerica.com or on all of the main social media outlets. So, till next time, I'm Ben Harrell, and I hope you have a safe and terrific day.